everyone, and welcome to another episode of Around the Payload. I am your host, the Blevins, and the grand finals might be over, but that's not going to stop the payload. We all need to be around the payload. So let's jump right into this, and I will start by introducing the awesome, amazing guest we have today. To my top left, we've got iPlayGames, host of Owl Recap and Omnic Lab. Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, what's up? It's good to be back. It's been a minute, bud. I'm ready.
Good. That's good to hear. To my top right, we have Sabe Reality, a content creator at Overbuff, Overwatch Wire, host of PBR Show, and Overwatch Esports Headlines Recap, and occasionally host for I need to start. Right. That's the show, yeah. Occasionally host at Broadcast GG's Scrim Nights. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I'm sure there is now. But thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be back on the show. For some reason, you keep asking, and I'm like, sure, why not?
That's what I like to hear. to my bottom left, we've got the newbie this week from your Overwatch. It's Frito. What's up, buddy?
Hey, everybody. Happy to be here. Talk some Overwatch. Excited.
Awesome, awesome. Excited to have you. And last but certainly not least, we have the Overwatch news ninja himself, the Monkey Prince. Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, good to be here.
Oh my gosh, there is someone there.
Yeah. Oh, it's not just a gag. That the Monkey Prince is a real person, and that's actually a live camera of him. He is a ventriloquist. Yep. let's jump in. And for those of you who are new here, this is a show that's very similar to Around the Horn from ESPN, but certainly different enough for us not to get cease and desist letters, or for ESPN to stop doing the cease and desist letters that I'm sure they're sending. But basically, we're going to talk about Overwatch League-related news. Everyone's going to go around, and I'm going to give out points, and you're going to hear a sound that sounds kind of like this. That is not your game going off. It is me handing out points to the guests, and at the end, we will crown a winner. But without further ado, let's jump into round number one.
Round one, capture the objective.
So like I mentioned before, the Overwatch League Grand Finals happened last week, man, I've lost all track of time, at the Barclays Center with the London Spitfire, kind of trouncing the Philadelphia Fusion here decisive fashion. So the question here, and we'll start with you, iPlayGames, was this a good Grand Finals?
Personally, I enjoyed them quite a bit. I thought that the event was really well planned. It went really smoothly. The community was great. Everyone was super excited, which to me, that was the most important part, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing everyone together and being super hyped and being able to share that with people from all over the world was to me the highlight of it. You can nitpick a few things of the event. You know, mm-hmm. a few people were complaining about the live acts. Some of the sound was a little harder here over at the venue. But to me, those are very small things that happened in there, and I enjoyed it so much. I don't know. It was a super awesome event.
Yeah, for sure. Sabriel, I want to get your thoughts here. Obviously, you're wearing the London Spitfire jersey right now, so it couldn't have been too bad for you. But what did you think? Was this kind of a quick Grand Finals good for Overwatch League?
Yeah, so first I was going to say, yes, it was a good Grand Finals for one reason at least, because both of my teams were in there. I was rooting for both Fusion and Spitfire. But and I agree here with a play here. It's just like the presentation was awesome. Mm-hmm. I think they did a great job there. However, Saturday was such a letdown as mm-hmm. a games-wise. And that really, like, as much as I was rooting for Spitfire to win, Fusion, I mean, they just didn't put up the fight, and mm-hmm. really, I wish it would have gone to game three. I really wish it would have, not for the easier chance to get my spray, because I didn't want to watch Khaled, but
yeah, we'll be talking about that specifically later in the show, I'm sure. But moving on, Monkey Prince, what did you think? Was this a good Grand Finals being so quick?
Yeah, like it was really quick, which is unfortunate, but at least it was quick just because how good London is. Like, it's going to be quick. At least we can see these like fantastic players, Gesture, Prophet, like everyone in Spitfire was just playing A+ Fury. I have to mention him. Mm-hmm. Just like they were playing amazingly, and so like pair that with the production, you know, the casters were great, mm-hmm. both Monty and Doa, Ubrex, all of them were great, mm-hmm. and then just like It was just an amazing final. It was very, like, tons of you watching viewership was great. Like, it's kind of hard when you've got all the different platforms now between Twitch and TV and ESPN and, you know, whatever platforms are in China. It's hard to get viewership, but from what we know, there's great viewership. Everyone seemed to enjoy it. From what I talked about, it's just really hype, really entertaining to watch. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Frito, last words here. I know you were there with a bunch of us there right on the floor. What did you think? Was this a good Grand Finals?
I think it's the best Grand Final that the patch could offer. I can't remember, actually, if we're going to talk about the patch or not, but I think, unfortunately, there's always going to be that asterisk over Season 1, and I wonder what they're going to change for Season 2, ultimately. Mm-hmm. But these were the two best teams for this patch, but I don't know if it's the highest level Overwatch that we could have had. That being said, though, I think it was a great Grand Final because there was so much there's so many big plays getting made in such a performance of dominance from the London Spitfire. It would have been nice maybe for it to go further, but I don't think that's typically the way Grand Finals even work. Like, typically, like, semifinal matchups are almost closer just by the structure of how tournaments work, the formatting of them. So I think it's about as good as we were going to get.
Yeah, definitely. No complaints here being on the floor of the event. Can't really complain too much. But let's move on here and talk about some other another team here that was in the playoffs. That, of course, is NYXL, one single tear shed by me. I talked with SBB at the media day, and then also there were some tweets, I believe, from ARK and some other players basically saying they weren't prepared nearly enough for these playoffs. Obviously, the patch was different. And really, even if they didn't say that actively, just from the naked eye, just looked like, man, they just did not come into this prepared. So, Sabriel, we'll start with you. Does this lack of playoff preparation set a precedent for Season 2 teams to really put in that extra effort for these playoffs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact that they they knew they had what they were going to be, Fusion or Uprising. I think that was a known quantity at that point. It's like, you only had two teams to prepare for and you had a month to do it. Like, what were you guys doing? Did you, like, put all your eggs into one basket? It's like, no other team. I mean, if that's what they did, every other team needs to make sure they do not do that. I mean, especially for something such an important moment. The whole season, everyone was like, yeah, they're in. I think we were even saying it last time I was on the show. And no, huge lesson here. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at my camera right now, you can see at the very least two different NYXL pieces of paraphernalia. So my eggs were certainly in a basket there. Monkey Prince, what do you think? Are we going to see teams really shift their performance and their time here?
I mean, the thing is, I don't think NYXL not doing as well as we thought they were had to do with their preparation. I think they did prepare. It's just that with the way the playoffs, assuming that this format of the playoffs stays the way it is, I think it's sort of inevitable where if you have it on a different patch, like if you play the whole season on, or like most of the season on a certain thing, or like even if there's some major meta shifting thing in the playoffs, you're going to have teams that just aren't as good at that thing. And with only like what, 3 weeks in a month, sure, you have to, that seems like a lot of time, but you have to figure out how you're going to do it on the patch. Then you have to prepare for that patch, is that which would be totally different than anything else you've ever played before. So with that sort of scenario, it's kind of impossible for any team to be at the same level they were before if they have to just completely rework their entire system.
Definitely a lot of good points there. Frito, what do you think about NYXL's kind of flop in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the only way they would have future-proofed themselves for the ultimate demise in the playoffs is if in Stage 4 they trained Jonak on different heroes, which by no way could they even have known that it's like, next, you know, playoffs, you could be playing Roadhog now, Jonak. Like, no, no one could have possibly known that that's the transition that that role was going to take. All of a sudden, it's obviously like I remember in the Stage 4 stage playoffs, they did start putting Jonak like on the Tracer role. Didn't look convincing at all in that Toronto game. I believe they got full held, if I'm not mistaken. But that's what they really needed to do. They needed to start to future-proof for those upcoming metas, which the rest of the season just didn't really count for. Ultimately, what we saw with the different stages was almost like what we had prior to Overwatch League, where each individual LAN or maybe even a season of Apex sort of had a personality, and there was multiple personalities in one season of Overwatch ultimately, so it just ended up not being in their wheelhouse, unfortunately. I don't even know if they could have prepared for it, basically, is what I'm saying. And it's a bit unfortunate, but that's the way it happens.
Yeah, definitely. I've already shed my one tear, so I'm not going to shed any more. At least one? Not one today on camera. But I play Last Words here on NYXL and maybe the future of playoff preparation.
I got to agree a little bit with Frito and the Monkey Prince here. I think that New York Excelsior wasn't – they weren't just sitting around and thinking they were too good to even practice, right? Like, say, BOE wasn't just sitting in the couch blowing at his fingers just waiting for the match to happen.
Shots fired.
I think they were all practicing, but like you guys said, the patch changed a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, having the best Tracer player in your team or the best Zenyatta player in your team wasn't enough, right? Mm-hmm. London Spitfire ended up taking this in big part to their Orisa and Roadhog combination, which, like you guys said, it's kind of hard to see that coming, but it does set a precedent for the future where teams have to be ready for these things. And they, like you guys said, putting all your eggs into one basket, having, say, BOB practice Tracer and Widow almost exclusively, maybe might not be the best way to go, mm-hmm. right? You might have to be more adaptable than that, and your roster might have to include people that can play almost every hero at a mm-hmm. top-tier level or be ready to take on that role immediately because, like we see, whoever team adapts better, faster, can end up taking the whole thing. And mm-hmm. London Spitfire just happened to be that team. Maybe they got a little bit of luck of the draw there. The dice roll was in their favor, and their players definitely took advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what everyone was saying, but the only point that I would make is that we didn't see, I don't even know if we saw any, but if we did, we didn't see nearly enough Libero on Hanzo. And like that was just a travesty to me. So I don't know. I think it's a mix of lack of preparation and I guess a little bit of bad luck. But neither here nor there. Season one is over. We must look forward to season two and transitioning over. One thing we will certainly not see in season two of Overwatch, as reported today, is Seagull. He has officially announced that he is stepping back from the Overwatch League to focus on streaming exclusively. And, I mean, this literally happened hours ago, so it's still kind of fresh for everyone. But, Monkey Prince, what are your first thoughts here? Is this retirement good for Overwatch League?
I mean, it definitely doesn't help, because obviously having probably the most popular Overwatch player leave the league is not going to help. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to, like, notably hinder growth at all. You know, the league is bigger than one player. There's, you know, most people are not going to leave because Seagull left. There's going to be a very small amount of people that do that. And so I don't think it's not going to help, but it's not going to particularly hurt at all. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just happy that Seagull is doing something that, you know, makes him happy. You know, it would have been way worse for the league if Seagull had continued, been super burnt out, and mm-hmm. then just, like, had a big, you know, had to leave in the middle of the season or something. So mm-hmm. I think I'm just glad he's doing what makes him happy.
Yeah, definitely a good move for him. But Frito, what are your thoughts here on Seagull leaving the Overwatch League?
I think it's poor for us as fans, especially since there's such a big percentage of the Overwatch League fans that are Dallas Fuel fans. Mm-hmm. Myself have been a hopeless romantic when it comes to trying to see a Dallas Fuel comeback at some point in the season that just never took place. But to their credit, that stage four run, it was epic. Seagull proved that he can play D.Va to mm-hmm. maybe he was one of the best D.Vas in stage four. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to realize that. Not only that, we're losing one of the best projectile players. Yep. While they were losing, even his Hanzo was popping off in a lot of those games mm-hmm. behind the scenes. You may not have noticed it because they're losing so bad, but Seagull's Hanzo and Junkrat, even Fari didn't play too much, but he had a lot of really cool heroes that were a joy to watch. And for him, it's definitely probably the better call, because players like him, which I might say are like that utility guy that mm-hmm. you can set up to do a bunch of wonky stuff, it's kind of proven to not be that valuable in the Overwatch League when you have 12-man rosters. Somewhat, mm-hmm. you can sometimes fit it in and just luck your way into a meta and be okay, but is that going to happen next season? You know, how many seasons is he going to have mm-hmm. his heart broken where his heroes just aren't playable or something? So it's definitely better for his career. So good luck to him.
Poor Seagull getting his heart broken.
Yeah, the broken heart of a Seagull. But iPlay, what do you think? Is this going to mean the broken heart of many fans and perhaps the Overwatch League as a whole?
I'm in the other boat, actually. I don't think so. I think that if Seagull had announced, "I'm retiring from gaming, see you guys later, I'm out," that would have been heartbreaking. But he's retiring from Overwatch League and announcing going to full-time streaming, which honestly is exciting to me. Watching Seagull is fun. He has a good personality. He's very educational. He's a very pleasant guy to just watch. And his level of play is super high. So as a streamer, I think he fits really well. And I actually think that this is going to happen more often as the league continues. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another player retire before next season even starts. Jake, for example, comes to mind, where we have players that have been looking into other avenues, because Overwatch League is a huge opportunity cost for some of these players. Yes, it is an amazing opportunity. If you have the chance to do it, I think it would be crazy not to take the chance. And I think that's what Seagull did. He had the opportunity to be part of the pioneering season of Overwatch League, and he was a part of it. But now that he put in his time, I think he realizes that it's a huge time commitment. There's a lot of things that you can't do while you're part of the league, because you have to put that organization, that team first before you. And some players, I mean, it's hard, right? Like, you saw guys like XQC, which I think are great entertainers, are great streamers, but their personality just doesn't fit with that kind of like workflow or commitment, I would say.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking a little bit more about XQC later on in the show, but Sabriel, last words here. What do you think about Seagull leaving the Overwatch League?
It's fine. It's fine. He and his fan base were instrumental in helping the league get its initial fan base, especially him and the stream team of the Fuel, getting that initial base in there, getting people to actually check it out and probably switching to another team quickly. But I think it's going to be fine. There's no problem. Those who want to keep watching are going to keep watching now. I think he was just there. People's first step into getting into Overwatch League, like, hey, let's check this out, what my favorite streamer's doing. Hey, this is pretty cool. So it's fine.
So you're saying Seagull was the gateway drug for the Overwatch League future Overwatch League junkie?
Yeah, I think it was for a lot of people, and now I think people are hooked.
Let's hope so, at least for the sake of this very show. But that is going to bring us to the end of round number one. A quick recap of the scores here. We've got Monkey Prince tailing out the back with 14 points. Sabriel a little bit ahead with 15. iPlay at 16. And Frito jumping out with an early lead, 17 points. But it's still anyone's game here as we go into round number two.
Round two. Capture the objective.
So, last week, or maybe two, I don't know, I've lost all concept of time. Some time ago, we had the official announcement of Guangzhou, China, and Atlanta as two officially announced expansion teams for the Overwatch League. Paris is another rumored one, which I would say is all but confirmed. There's still a nebulous, maybe three other teams that are rumored to be out there. So, Frito, we'll start with you. What's maybe one or two cities that you think we should definitely see in Season 2?
I would say the first one that comes to mind is Toronto, just because it's one area of North America that's not getting covered. Mm-hmm. And the other one, oh, I don't know. I should have researched this. My geography is terrible. I would say somewhere in Brazil, maybe, or in South America in general. I don't know if I can say a whole region, but I think that those are the two like land masses that don't have one covered yet, or even any teams really to root for, whereas like London at least can kind of be the Europe team for the season one, for example.
Yeah, those are good. I mean, I can basically see Toronto from my house, so I'm always a big fan of Toronto. But iPlay, what do you think here? What's two teams? I mean, you already got your number one overall pick team.
I'm already happy.
But what are two teams that you think we should definitely see not for your sake, but for the sake of the league?
I do agree that Latin American teams would be nice. I think that a Brazilian team is due. There's a huge gaming scene down there that's underrepresented. I would love to see a Colombian team, just because that's where I was born. So nationality wise, that would be pretty cool. And it's an untapped scene down there. I think that video game industry is developing down there, and there's not as much investment. There's not as many people who take it seriously. So I think that putting an organization like Overwatch League down there would be great for that region. And aside from that, I think Germany would be a cool country too. There's a lot of talent coming from there.
So here's the question. If there was a Colombian team and the Atlanta team, which team would you root for?
Oh boy. Well, World Cup would definitely be Colombia. Overwatch League, Atlanta all the way, baby.
Ooh, nice. The line drawn in the sand. But Sabriel, what do you think? What are two must-see cities for season two?
Oh, geez, you know, being from Fargo, I think we should have one here, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I
would say probably not.
now I can't stop the accent, even though I already have one. Chicago. I would love a Midwest team. It's the closest I'm going to get to here in Fargo. But I think Chicago and the Milwaukee region, I think that's a really good spot for sports. And like I said, no bias because I'm the closest. But also, I like to see Finland. Finland, we got a lot of great Finnish players out there. That I think that'd true. Be a great spot.
That is true. They are one of my – I don't even know if you can call them a dark horse because they're such a good team, but I guess compared to South Korea, everyone's a dark horse in the World Cup. but, yeah, Monkey Prince, last words here. What are your two – one or two cities or regions that you want to see in Season 2?
This is probably, like, the super obvious answer, but Busan. Just because, like, South Korea is – like, there's so many South Korean players, so many good South Korean talent and fans. That's, like, you can't just have them have one team. Mm-hmm. And so Busan, it's the second largest city in South Korea. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the logical choice for another team. And then you said Finland get a team. Sweden's also a good option if you're going for Europe. Mm-hmm. Stockholm is probably the biggest – is the biggest city in, like, the Nordic region. Mm-hmm. And so if also a lot of Swedish players, you know, whether you look at Overwatch League or contenders – that would also be a good spot to put another team.
Yeah, definitely a lot of really good choices there brought up. Man, that would be – let's just – you know what? Let's just add them all. We'll add them all. I'm making the decision now. Add every single one we've talked about here.
What a nice guy.
Yeah, confirmed. Sorry, I was holding back this whole time.
Blevins is funding all of them.
Yep, I sure am. With the lost hopes and dreams of an NYXL Season 1 victory. But let's move on here and talk a little bit about the All-Star Weekend. Not a ton of details out on it. We have the rosters for the Atlantic and Pacific Division. But iPlay, I want to know, like, what should we be looking forward to seeing here in the All-Star Weekend? What should it include?
Honestly, I think it would be cool if it was a little bit more lighthearted. Obviously, you do want to see all the best players competing and doing all their crazy stuff. But I think it's a good opportunity to showcase like some more fun stuff, right? Like some fun games. Maybe you can have some role swapping where you put Fleta on main tank or, I don't know, some crazy stuff like that. Maybe some mystery heroes where they have to play some... Or even like some of the... the special event games, right? Like maybe a Lucio Ball game or something. I don't know. I think it would be fun to have some extra stuff that you don't normally see, aside from like a cool, you know, match of like the best versus the best. I think I'd like to see that.
That's a really good suggestion. Sabriel, what do you think? Anything that the All-Star game needs to see?
I wrote down two things here. Nice. First one, I think we kind of just touched on this already. I was thinking a Mystery Heroes team deathmatch. You can't turn off some of the heroes. You can't have, like, Bastion or...
Moira.
But, yeah, or Moira. But the other one, the one I want to see more than anything, is Genji Pulse Bomb Volleyball.
Yes, I did just see that video on Reddit. It is definitely an interesting one to see. Monkey Prince, anything you want to see or that we should see at the All-Star Game, All-Star Weekend?
Yeah, I definitely agree that it should be lighthearted. You know, I'd love to have, like, you know, some playful trash talk before the games, tons of, like, you know, just everyone having fun, like, tons of those, like, Widow headshot only things, all the Lucios in the gameplay, Lucio, all the, you know, you have role swaps, you know, you see who can speedrun Retribution the fastest using only four Bastions or whatever. Like, you know, just tons of fun stuff, tons of lighthearted stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I want Brendan Sideshow to have, you know, be their usual bantery selves during the All-Star game.
Have a caster team go up against them or something.
Ooh.
Yeah. We all know who would win that one, but...
It'd still be fun to watch.
It'd be tons of fun to watch. With, like, you know, Seagull Canada, like, some of the players casting, you know, Jake there casting, or, you know, someone else on the players casting while all of the casters and desk players play. You know, it's just tons of fun.
That would be super fun. Frito, last words here. What do you want to see from the All-Star Weekend?
I guess I'm the only sweaty tryhard here.
There has to be one.
Joke around the whole time because some of the best players in the world. We're going to see them just goof around. Okay, so I agree with you. Like, no matter what, the All-Star game can't be taken that seriously, but I would like to see them play actual matches, but maybe with some flair of trying out some different team comps. So, for example, see, just try Symmetra, for example. hopefully that's a thing. Like, Bastion bouncing with the Symmetra, or, you know, really crazy triple DPS comps. Just put on a show for us, especially, I think, one of the first, the starting teams, because there's subs, too, that the talent, I believe, voted in. Like, the mainstream six is who we voted, and there's going to be substitutions as well. But I think it's something like, say, Bjolby, Pine, and Carpe on the same team or something like that. Like, just put them all at DPS. I just want to see DPS the scoreboard light up with kills.
Yeah, man, that's a lot of really good suggestions here. I've got two suggestions. I want to see Lucio Ball, but with the ball being Hammond. So there's one player as like have a caster and as Hammond, and they just get to like be crazy. And the one thing that I absolutely think should be there is an actual dunk contest. Like lower the rim down to like 7 feet, and let's have an actual dunk contest. Just like the NBA All-Star game. But
that would end poorly.
Maybe it would, but it would be glorious, at least for the fans. But last question here in round number two, keeping in the theme of the All-Star weekend and a little bit with the World Cup. There's someone who's not on the All-Star roster or the World Cup roster for South Korea, and that happens to be, by no coincidence, the Grand Finals MVP Prophet. Sabriel, we'll start with you. How in the world does this happen? How is Prophet not on these lists?
So I thought about the World Cup. Do we even know if he tried out? I don't know if that's a known. He might not have wanted to. So that was my first thought there. But otherwise, like, if not, then what's going on here? What is wrong with you guys? Like, here, yeah, you have all the star power now around him. Then I was thinking like that. What, when the rosters for the All-Star teams were being determined, did Prophet really have the, I mean, he was always good, don't get me wrong, he was amazing, but did he have the same star power at that time, even like 2 months ago, a month and a half ago? And maybe that part of it too, like when you have an all-star team, like of course you want your best, but also you want your people who like are popular. You have Kaguri and you have things like that. And so so someone's saying here in the chat, there were no tryouts for the Korean team. Maybe he just didn't want to do it.
That would explain it. That's the only logical explanation. But like, Bird Ring is on the All-Star team, and there's no point at which I would consider Bird Ring having been better than Prophet.
Right?
But Monkey Prince, is there any explanation for this, or is this just a grave, just awful travesty?
So my theory for the All-Star game is that I assume it's sort of like the regular All-Star. It's a sort of release where you have all the talent, all the different people, rank them. So this is my number one pick, so my number two pick, my three pick, whoever. And so what I guess is that, like, a lot of them might say, like, oh, well, Stryker basically carried Boston to a stage of victory, so I'll put him as number one. And I'll put Prophet at two or three. And so when I was like, oh, well, it's a side player, it's an insane name, so I'll put him at number one, and I'll put Prophet at, like, three, because he's also good. And so that would be my guess, and depending on the way they ranked it, he may have just not made the cut. That would be my only guess how he sort of slipped through, is that he was sort of at everyone's, like, number two or number three, and he didn't have enough of those number ones. And then for the World Cup, that I don't get as well. Like, the only thing I think is that the reason they chose him, they chose, like, say, Bjolby over him, because that's probably who he'd end up replacing in the team, is that they valued Bjolby's leadership. And, you know, maybe he had some, like, sort of communication or, like, something like that that they valued. Or, like, they wanted to keep the New York DPS together and then adding Carpex for, like, you know, because he's an amazing widow. So, the World Cup, I can sort of understand, depending on, like, what their strategy going in was. But the All-Stars game it was just weird.
Well, wasn't Wizard Hyung the coach for the World Cup? So like,
Pavane. But
oh, Pavane, but still NYXL.
Yeah, New York coach, yes.
Yeah, so favoritism there. I mean, that's what I would do. I wouldn't have even brought any other players. still no explanation here for why Bird Ring is on the All-Star team and not Prophet. But Frito, is there any explanation for this? I just need to know, how could this possibly have happened?
I think the World Cup one makes a lot more sense than the All-Star one, and that's where I'll try to focus. I could be wrong in this, but I think that the starting DPS for the World Cup is Carpe and Fleta, or am I mixing that up with the All-Star?
The starting DPS for the South Korea World Cup are CBOB, Libero, and Carpe. Those are the three DPS they have on their start. There's seven.
Okay, so that must have been the All-Star game where Fleta is
starting?
Okay. Well, in either case, the problem with the World Cup is that and a lot of people get mad at me on Twitter when I say stuff like this, but honestly, I think South Korea legitimately could go to their fourth string, maybe even further, and still win the World Cup. Okay, so understand what I'm saying when I say that. I think they could skip the top six, the top 12. I'm not going to do math on straight, but
yeah, 18, 24. Yeah,
they could go to their fourth best team and still win. Okay, so with that, I don't think it's too outrageous to say, let's just take the best team at the time, maybe add in a Carpe, because why not? He's very clearly one of the best players in the world. So that makes sense to me. Establish synergy. Why put a lot of extra work into the World Cup in order to develop synergy just so you can put profit into the mix, when really his synergy is with gesture? So if you don't have gesture, I don't really see a reason to take Carpe. Now, before the All-Star thing, I don't really want to apologize for him not getting a cut, but I'll try to make the argument anyway. But realistically, I think flex players, when they don't play Widow, kind of get swept under the rug. And that's where profit, I think, starts to fall in, because Fleta, who had a worse season overall than profit, played Widow. So at least you get in his perspective and see what he's doing mechanically. Profit, he instead, I think, shows up really big when he just pulls out a hero out of nowhere. So the people that know the game a lot better are like, Profit doesn't play Pharah. Oh, wait, he plays Pharah now. Oh,
he's just the best at that, too.
I think he did that in Stage 2 against Jake. He took his Junkrat. He did that in Apex Season 4 with Genji. He just does it all. He's Mr. Steal Your Hero. And he should be All-Star for that. But it's hard to see, like, if you don't put all the extra work in, basically is what I'm trying to say. He doesn't always pop off the screen because London has had such a slump in the middle of the season.
That's as good of an argument as I've ever heard. It still doesn't explain why Birdring is on the roster over Profit. That's true. He plays Widow. Okay, that at least has some sort of like
the heads,
followed. Like this is like the standardized test, like followed through with error. It at least kind of makes sense there. I play last chance at redemption for the All-Star like roster. Is there anything here that's redeemable about it?
I think it was mostly a matter of timing. Like you said, there's so much talent in South Korea. There's so many picks that you can go and be okay, especially for the World Cup. I don't think that not taking him is a mistake. And the truth is, like you said, Profit only really shined at the very last end of the stage. That's when everyone was like, wow, Profit. I think that's when he earned that MVP award. Before that, I don't think they were really considering him for that until he showed up for playoffs and the finals, and everyone was like, okay, this guy is just playing out of his mind. The new patch was definitely showing his skills and highlighting his strengths, and I think that that's why it comes to such a surprise to everyone. Like, why is the Overwatch MVP not in the All-Star team or the World Cup? But throughout the season, he, like you said, London was in a slump. They were not really showing what they could do. Profit kind of fell under the rug a little bit there, and only came out at the end once all of the voting, the rosters, and everything had been made.
I just like, man, the thing is, like, it wasn't it like the it was the casters and the staff that picked the like extra All-Star people, right? So like, and Press too. It's on them. They messed up by putting Birdring in. I'm blaming them. All I'm gonna say is that I did not have a vote. So don't blame me. I'm blaming everyone else. Just give me let me write out both rosters for next season. I would have just picked NYXL versus probably just for I don't know. NYXL versus Seoul. I would have just written down the rosters, not included anyone else. There would be no the only people on the bench would have been me. I would have been sitting right in the middle, subbing in. But that's why I don't have any power. But let's move on here. And recap round number two. This is a really close one here. We've got Monkey Prince and iPlay rounding it out with 34, Sabriel with 35 points, and Frito just a little couple of points ahead here at 37, but it's still anyone's game as we go into the buy or sell round, round number three.
The payload is approaching its destination.
And for those of you who are new to the show, the buy or sell round, all the contestants are going to choose either buy, agree, or sell, disagree. For the following statements here, and we'll start with the Monkey Prince here. Buy or sell Blizzard just running back the Summer Games event for the third year in a row?
I'm buying the idea but selling the execution, if that makes any sense. It's like, I don't think there's any, like, so I think the perfect example of perfect comparison here is Summer Games to Retribution Uprising. Mm-hmm. Because I think Retribution Uprising was the right way to do it. It's the same sort of concept, same sort of idea, mm-hmm. but you're revamping it. It's mm-hmm. new and improved. It's very much like a new and improved Uprising. Like, it, you know, I was when it was announced, I was, like, excited to go do it. I did it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. Whereas with Lucio Ball, it's looking like it's going to be the same this year. So it's been mm-hmm. the same 3 years in a row. And let's be honest, the original Lucio Ball wasn't even that great to begin with. There's so many ways you could improve it. Like, mm-hmm. the best thing about Lucio is his wall riding, and you can barely wall ride in it. Mm-hmm. The ball's constantly in the air. You can barely reach it. It's basically playing volleyball rather than soccer. You know, you seem to move so slowly across the field. Like, there's so many different ways in which you could improve it, mm-hmm. you know, but they instead appear to be just releasing basically the same event. So that's why I don't like it, just because mm-hmm. there are so many ways you could improve it that they don't seem to be taking advantage of.
Just make it the ball Hammond. You heard it here first, folks. Frito, what do you think? Buy or sell Blizzard running it back with the Summer Games event?
I will buy, because I think they set up the precedent that they'll always repeat these events to some degree. So mm-hmm. even if they add new features, Lucio Ball's coming back, just like the other Archives event. Mm-hmm. Played the first year's game, too, along with the other one. You can play it in a big Brawl playlist. The fans, they want to be able to come back for timed event game modes. That's a mm-hmm. good thing. And also, new cosmetics. I love cosmetics, personally. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be developing the game. There's my little comma and but, though. I wish that now, especially with Overwatch League being done, I don't know what this new social feature is, but I hope it's something for hardcore players. It's about that time where I want to go on a big ranked matchmaking rant. So I want them to focus their attention to improving ranked again. As you can have all the casual Lucio Ball stuff that you want. Mm. I hope that funding and my skin dollars is going to improve that. That's what I personally want.
Definitely some good points there. I play buy or sell, running it back.
I'm going to sell, but not because I dislike Lucio Ball. It's because at this point it does feel a little bit recycled. Mm. And like the Monkey Prince said, I think that the game itself feels a little clunky because, you know, Overwatch was not meant to be Rocket League, but some iteration in it could actually make the game feel a little more. I do mm-hmm. feel like it feels a little slow. I do like that they added the ability to rank up and lose your ball, so it gives you kind of like an incentive to group up with your friends and mm-hmm. joke around for a little bit. That's pretty cool. But I would like to see some iteration, try and make the game better. I do agree that bringing back the event regularly and the players knowing that this is kind of a recurring event is nice, you know, something to look forward to. But as long as they keep iterating on the game mode and improving it, because at this point, yeah, it just seems like the same old thing that is coming back again.
Yeah, for sure. Sabriel, last words here. Buying or selling them running back the Summer Games event?
Oh, buy, because I get more competitive points. No. Lucio Ball is an interesting thing. When it first came out, I adored it. And then after the first hour, I was like, all right, kind of had enough of this. And again, I will buy the heck out of this if they reiterate on it even further. Smaller arena, I think, would be great. Mm. A heavier ball, if we don't get Hammond, a heavier ball would be great. But and there's so many ways to improve this, and I hope they've learned their lesson. I think they did with the Retribution Uprising thing, mm-hmm. And with the Junkenstein, we got a new iteration of when you added Symmetra, mm-hmm. the dragon, and we also got a Yeti mode, Yeti hunt. Mm-hmm. So I think we're gonna get a new thing with. We're going to get a new one, Lucio Ball, here. We're going to get some variation on this. And so I buy.
Nice. If it's Hammond in the ball, man, I don't know what I'll do. I'll clip this over and over and just post it constantly about how I'm the new Oracle. Take a step, Brent. moving on here. It's been, I don't know, a week or so since the transfer window has opened for Overwatch League teams, and we just haven't seen any news whatsoever other than Seagull taking a step back. So, Frito, buy or sell the team's not jumping in on this transfer window immediately?
Well, I think I'll buy it because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors until Slasher tells us all. Wait, watching Twitter to find out like 2 weeks before it happens for real. But yeah, without a doubt, especially some of these contenders players, there is some insane talent. Like, there's teams out there that are definitely better than some of the bottom half of the league that's in the league right now. So without a doubt, I don't think they're just like sleeping on this opportunity. I think, tell you what it actually is, the players hopefully are competing and are arguing and debating for better sign-on bonuses and contracts and things like that. So that's probably the stage they're in right now. That's why we haven't heard anything. It's happening, I'm sure.
Good points. I play buying or selling this.
Yeah, I think that teams are just bidding this time at this point. It's a great time to really shake up your teams. Teams like the Mayhem and Shanghai Dragons, even Dallas Fuel, right? Teams that are losing some members and have been struggling a little bit in the past. This is a great opportunity for them to pick up exactly what they need. And I think that rushing into any trades or just trying to get a player because you think is good might not be the best move. And like we've seen, changes in patches and stuff changes the value even of some of the players. So you have to be pretty strategic in how you're going to build your roster for season two. I think that you have to take teams like New York Excelsior as an example too, where it was a dominating team for pretty much the entire season and one patch threw it off balance. So what can you do to not let your team be in that position? I think there's a lot of thought that has to go into that, and it relies a lot on the coaches and their analysts to do their research, look at contenders, like you said, look at talent that is outside of the Overwatch League and really find that hidden gem.
A lot of good points there too. Sabriel, what do you think? Buying or selling? The team's kind of waiting on jumping on this transfer window.
I don't know how to answer that. The buy or sell, or the yes or no. they are doing it, so I guess buy. And my first thought too is also contenders. We're waiting for contenders finals to happen here. Like all the grand finals are lining up here. So we want to We're biding our time, waiting for those moments. And why bother mentioning the contract extensions are also going on right now? What's the use in mentioning that right now, except for generating hype that's not gonna pay off for 6 months?
It's for us. It's for us doing these shows. That's who it's for.
No, please come on, give me some news.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, like I said, they're biding their time. There's no reason to be the first one out of the gate. The fact that Siegel even said he was retiring today is kind of technically the first news we've had relating to this, but it's not even technically related to it. And so they're just waiting. They're just waiting for contenders. That's the big one.
That's true. That's true. Monkey Prince, last words here. What do you think? Buying or selling this?
I'm buying. Just one quick thing. This is too good timing. I'll just translate a Korean article that apparently Seoul Dynasty announced a public search for contenders Korea players and coaches. So that was perfect timing right there. But I'm buying just because right now they can only make trades or sign academy team players, so they're not really competing with anyone for these signings. So you can take your time, you know, do it right, look for more, you know, talent, see how they perform in the playoffs, you know, do that. I think the real like rush will probably when the full floodgates open, where all the teams, not just the expansion teams, can buy free agents. So then it'll be a rush to make sure you get whoever's left.
Right.
And then, and the one thing I am slightly surprised is that, which again, maybe I think I'm waiting and seeing how they do, is see more coach pickups. It's like it's been shown that you know, those can be the biggest difference of all, and there's often there's no restriction on when you can pick up staff, and so so I would like to see that's another thing to watch out for, just which coaches are going to get picked up from which teams, because that can make a really big difference on how a team does. They might even want to get their new coach before they decide who they want for the roster.
That's a real man. There's a lot of really good points I didn't think of, and also I worded the question wrong. But you guys did a great job as always at recovering from that. So awesome there. Let's move into the last non-meme question, although many people would consider this a meme question in and of itself. Here, I'll just put it bluntly. I play buying or selling us seeing XQC on an Overwatch League team in season two.
I'm going to say hard sell. XQC is a great player. He's a great tank. I actually find him entertaining. I don't mind watching his stream. He's a good entertainer and a streamer. But I don't see XQC coming back to the league just because I don't think he has the commitment to the league. I don't think he has he can put his team first. Just today when Siegel announced his retiring from Overwatch League, I think we saw XQC tweet at him and say, best decision ever. To which, to me, it says he's enjoying his freedom. He's enjoying the way that he can interact with the stream and having that liberty. He's a young kid, too. I think that he shouldn't be caged. He shouldn't be bound by organization's rules and stuff. Just let him be free. He's already found his success in the streaming. So I don't know why he would come back. I don't think that it's his playing field, honestly.
Yes, iPlay is advocating for a free range XQC, not a cage XQC here. Sabriel, buy or sell us seeing XQC in season number 2?
Sell, and unless if he, I will sell until, unless, start over yet again, sell, unless he wants to make an attempt to actually do it, he needs to make a very public, concerted effort to clean up his act. Mm-hmm. He was so toxic and his fandom was so toxic that it really hurt the fuel. And I mean, I saw it like on my work accounts, like people, every time I would tweet about him, just the crap that I mean, I don't know if people thought I was personally firing him, but but like, no. So if he wants to, I will welcome him back if he wants to, if he makes a concerted public effort to clean up his image. Otherwise, like, no, it's not going to happen. And I honestly don't think he wants to. Mm-hmm. He has a mature side to him. Last point, I talked to him, like, launched the Overwatch League. I talked to him. He has a mature side to him. It's just we never see it.
Yeah.
And I like that part of XQC.
Yeah. Would you accept him back on the London Spitfire? Ah, the truth comes out. The truth comes out. I'll accept him back on someone else's team. Bucky Fritz, buy or selling XQC season 2?
I'm selling for season 2. I could see a future where he, like, even for season 3 or season 4, something else like that, where, you know, as you said, like, if he decides to clean up his act, if he decides to, you know, decides, I really miss that being that 6v6 competitive, you know, pro play, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, even if, you know, in the far off land, if he eventually does decide to come back, I think that he would almost go probably see like a trial period with some team. Like, he would end up being signed for like some academy team for some ludicrous sum. And that would, you know, if there's two-way players as well, like, we're going to put you on our academy team. We'll see if you, well, you know, for an entire season of contenders, if you want to explode and do something and no controversies. And if you do that, then we'll sign you to our Overwatch League team. I think, like, he even said, like, recently in a clip, like, how after he got cut, like, all the organizations cut ties with him, Twitch cut ties with him, like, people did not want to be associated with him. You know, he was the leper of the Overwatch community. And so he's, you know, it takes a lot of time to rebuild that up. So I think season 2 is too soon. Potentially, depending on what he wants after that, maybe, but not next season.
Hmm. Interesting. Frito, last words here. Can we get a buy for XQC in season 2?
Just to be different, I will personally buy it. I think the smart money is on selling, obviously. But of course, if you want to go big and take the underdog, I'll buy it, because I think there's a lot of value that he can bring to the league, especially the redemption arc story of someone who is a more traditional. The word has been used already, so I might as well just say it. I don't know if I necessarily would go so far as to say that he's toxic, but he's a more traditional. He's not a normie, okay? So he's rough around the edges. And it's the type of guy that I want to see representing the league, but in a good way, in a way of being able to work that into fixing the problems that a lot of young gamers have. Mm-hmm. And I see that as a opportunity for growth of the community, and also a lot of hype for probably an expansion team or something. I kind of don't want to see too many teams that are looking for like diamonds in the rough, a bunch of no-name players. As nice it was, I loved watching the Boston Uprising, for example, launch their way to stardom. But I'd like to see those teams that have those star players on them for us to watch and sort of be the figurehead of a new organization. I think XQC definitely could be that. Although it's probably not in his best interest, just like for Seagull. Why play and grind when you could just stream? So he probably shouldn't do it, but I think it would be good for the Overwatch League overall. He's a big personality and we need them.
Yeah, man, a lot of really good points there for XQC and for, I guess, for not XQC as well. But let's move on here to the last question. Of course, this is everyone's favorite segment here. It is the meme question, the buy or sell, and what better a meme than that DJ Khaled, and I'm putting air quotes here for the podcast people, concert at the grand finals. Sabriel, buying or selling that whole the DJ Khaled concert, that whole thing.
Oh, this is so easy. Sell. Like, I was thinking, like, you know what they could do to help to see how this worked out. You know, the crowd was so dead during the show that if we could get a picture or a video of him performing to an empty stadium and then throwing that out there as a PR statement and seeing if anyone notices, I think that would be a really interesting show of if people were paying attention during that whole segment.
Yeah, it was rough, to say the least.
Overwatch me.
Monkey Prince, buyer selling DJ Khaled and company.
I would sell. I wasn't actually that in person, so I can only say what I saw from stream, what people have told me that it wasn't great. And I've heard people say it was better in person than on stream, but the one said I wasn't there. I have no idea how it actually played out. To be fair, at least in person, like, you didn't have chat scrolling by just constantly making fun of it.
That is not true, because I specifically opened up chat while I was there. But go on,
Anyway. But it's just like, even if you were to take the drama side, it was okay, which most people would say it's worse than that. But even if you take that, there could have been so much more better opportunities to do. Mm-hmm. Like, especially bring up League, there's League for Worlds. I know they basically have a song made for Worlds every single year. And it's usually really good. They have a performer. It's usually from a performer that at least, cares, or has better knowledge.
Knows what it is.
Yeah, knows what the game is, knows more about the fan base is like. Mm-hmm. So, even if it was just okay, which most people would say it wasn't, there's so much greater opportunity there to get a performer, to have some more performance that would be just a lot more meaningful, a lot more exciting for everyone involved than just saying, you know what, we need a big name. We want people who just tune on this on TV to have somebody think it's legitimate. Who can we afford? DJ Khaled, he can afford him. put him on stage.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that. Frito, you were there. You saw it. Well, buying or selling that performance?
I felt the pain with everyone else. Okay. It's more fun to play devil's advocate, so I'll continue down that road. I will buy it, but obviously I didn't like it. To the point where Deathblow's sitting next to us, he turns in the corner and is like, I don't know the words to this song. It's Cardi B. She's a big deal in New York. I don't get it either. But at the venue, it felt like people were having a good time. I was sitting there like a bump on a log, personally. But it seemed like people were enjoying themselves. And the problem is, I think the Overwatch League was in a really tough spot. Obviously, I would prefer that money to go into the contenders scene. That's a criticism that was raised. In hindsight, of course, that's a better idea. However, with the restrictions that they had, with the time slot, with the type of show they needed, it's not like they could get a band on there to quickly set up all their instruments, do a sound check, tune everything, just for what? Was it 20 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Yeah.
Your options for performers for that kind of slot is really low. Now, they had a long time to book this. Maybe they could have... who could have they got? I don't know. But it could have been worse, even. He did his best. And I got to give him kudos for that. So it could have been worse. That's why I'm buying it, I guess. Not a great reason, but...
Fair. I play last words here. Buying or selling DJ Khaled?
I am going to sell, but I will agree with Frida on some things. I think that everyone's been pooping on DJ Khaled for the performance and stuff. But honestly, like, at the venue, people were getting into it. Maybe because we were in the ground floor and maybe that was different. But I had some people next to me standing up and singing and dancing. So... as a performer, he was definitely doing his job, being there, hyping up the crowd. Like you said before, Blevins, I think that they're trying to give the league kind of this like NBA style, very urban, a lot of like hip hop, that kind of like style they're trying to go for, which I'm okay with. But the only thing that it did feel to me is that DJ Khaled was there for the money, right? He got offered a big sum of money. He came in and was like, oh, this is a great time to promote my new album to a completely new market that maybe doesn't listen to me. And it was clearly obvious that for him it was just a good commercial move, but he couldn't care less about Overwatch. Maybe he likes the gaming scene and he wants the game to thrive, but it's not part of his life. So I don't know. I didn't feel very represented with him up in stage. Although I do agree, you have to have an act that is able to move up and down the stage very easily. You can't be setting up anything. A DJ or a single performer is the way to go. I think that they could have done the research a little better and get somebody that fitted the crowd a little more. But I guess they were trying to go for that mainstream money there.
Yeah, I mean, T-Pain is someone who streams Overwatch and has a very similar...
So did Zed.
Like, what's that?
Zed also. Zed got to... He was, like, Coonmer and a couple others.
Yeah, I'm just going to assume that those people weren't available, or maybe, I don't know, they were overlooked for something. But, like, T-Pain literally streams Overwatch and has a similar type of show that DJ Khaled did. I think he could have done it. But... that's neither here nor there. I just, man, if I had to choose DJ Khaled or someone else, I would choose another one. I put that in there just to have that stupid joke. But that is going to bring us to the end of the rounds here. We will recap here and move to the finals. And this was actually a really close one. I don't know if we've had I barely ever remember the scores. I don't know if we've had one this close. But tied for third, fourth place at 59 points was iPlayGames and Monkey Prince. Sorry, guys. You are going to be the judges for the finals here. But that does mean... that Save Reality and Frito move into the final round here.
The payload is approaching its destination.
This is my third time.
But now's your chance. So here, I'm going to be giving a question. Both finalists here are going to plead their case to iPlayGames and the Monkey Prince. They're both going to vote. And if there is a tie, I get to choose the victor. But unless that is the case... they will get to choose. So we're going to keep it simple here. This is really, even though I think I've said this for the past like six episodes, this is going to be the bow tie on season one here. And the tossing of a coin, I'm not actually going to toss because I break something every time I do, shows that Sabriel, you're going to go first here. But simply, what was your favorite moment from the season one of the Overwatch League?
Gosh, I had four. I had four. I'm trying to
think of one. Just prepared.
I had Zoe in a leather jacket. I had Spitfire just winning, of course. I had Susie just trash talking during the grand finals, which I love. But my favorite, I think the most fun I had was watching Fuel's triumphant stage 4 and final or whatever stage 4 playoffs or thing. That was so much fun. I was getting so into it. I was rooting so hard for them. That was the most fun I think I had. Oh, and sanitize. But no, the fuel kicking butt in stage 4 at the end there was so much fun to watch.
The Fuel making a really good stage playoff berth there and actually coming back from the ashes of the literal dumpster fire that they were the first three stages. A good pick there. Frito, your favorite moment from Overwatch League Season 1.
I could pick a bunch too, but I'll narrow it down to one. I'll say the emergence of Pine, because I think it did so much for both the sport, but also the player, because you have a guy who comes in on a map and puts, in Stage 1, remember, probably the most incredible mechanical performance we may have ever seen up to that point, because... Heroes like McCree hadn't been used for quite a while. I mean, there was Widow maybe early on, but that level of skill put on display for everyone in such a tight amount of time, there was so much energy in that, and it's the first time we saw a player build a personality through their own gameplay rather than prior to the Overwatch League. Whereas when we start in discussions like, in comparison, why is Prophet not an MVP? Well, does he have his own, like, catch name or whatever, you know, his nickname, right? You got Big Boss Pine. It's just like... Prophet's just Prophet right now. I think Prophet's cool, but Pine has that mythos about him now that will move forward and made NYXL a blast to watch. Even when their games were kind of boring because they were winning so hard, you always thought Pine would put on a show, and he often did, going on flanks, and he continued that throughout the season, but it started in Stage 1.
And those are two really good choices there. So we have the choice between the triumphant rise of the Dallas Fuel in Stage 4 versus the creation of the Big Boss Pine. iPlayGames, which one are you picking?
Oh man, these are some really good arguments, but I'm just gonna have to say that Except reality did put in my mind Zoe in the leather jacket. And I just gotta go for that.
Okay.
So neither the fuel or pine. You pick Zoe.
You don't have to pick for any specific reason. You just have to pick a person. It's okay. Monkey Prince, are you declaring a winner here, or is it going to move to my choice?
I think despite the fact that Prophet does have a nickname, I don't know what you're talking about. Your money shot Prophet. Definitely a thing, guys. Definitely.
Cut it. Are we not doing phrasing anymore?
but despite that, I think I'll go with Pine, just because, as I said, that is like that's the first superstar, like the first overarching superstar. So I think I'll go with Frito.
Man, it is a tie, man. I mean, it's really, really not hard for me to pick at all. I mean, obviously, I'm going with Pine here. Big Boss Pine is definitely.
I didn't plan this at all.
Definitely.
I feel.
I've been holding it back. I've been holding back the tears for so long. But there's one thing I can't cry about, and that is Big Boss Pine. I will say that the Dallas Fuel making a comeback meant absolutely nothing to me, so it almost didn't matter at all what he picked, but he also happened to pick the correct answer. So it was a double whammy there. But Sabriel, great choice here. But Frito, you are the victor here. Let me play some music for you. You have captured the payload. The floor is yours. Sell out, shout out, whatever you'd like. You've got the floor.
Just subscribe to Your Overwatch. Find us on YouTube, do all sorts of different types of videos for casual fans and esports fans alike. And follow our Twitter. Why not? Go watch that.
There we go. Short, sweet, and selling out. I love it. But that is going to be it, everyone. Sabriel, you've had a really good run at making the finals. You ironically have like the luxury watch blue curse of like choking in the finals. Ironically enough, but that is going to be it for I Play Games, for Save Reality, for Frito, for the Monkey Prince. I'm the Blevins, and we'll catch you guys next week around the payload. Bye-bye.